It's basically a Kentucky Brown as a deck.
Completely inappropriate way to think about it.
When you know people are watching you consistently the entire time, you tend to play differently.
As the game grows broad.
Maybe my expectations were a little bit too low.
I could see it being a complete and utter freaking train wreck.
Heartbreaking to be deserted by your deck at the 11th hour.
I have searched high and low. I have crawled through the dregs of the internet looking for a fun modern deck.
I say, go for it. Make your cash.
It is swelteringly hot across most of America. Oh, you brave soul. Thank you for cooling your ears with this episode of Try Hard. We'll check in on Prague and SCG Baltimore, and we're going to heat up your collection if you're lucky enough to be drawn in this week's Try Hard's Patreon raffle. It's all this week on this episode of Try Hard's. We get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? As I may have mentioned a moment ago, it is swelteringly hot here. In fact, I keep, like one sci-fi hero, looking up to the horizon to see if I can see the twin suns bearing down on me here in the Midwest. So I've gone with one of the lightest beverages that I enjoy, the make-your-own shandy of just getting a good wheat beer, good Hefeweizen, and then putting a slice of lemon in it to make it just that little bit more citrus crisp and refreshing. Ooh. That's what we've got here in Command Central tonight. Matt, what are you drinking in the dirty, sweaty South?
It is dirty, it's sweaty, and it's gross. I just have a Old Forester bourbon with a giant ice cube. I had too much fun last week at my sales summit. Got to take it to light because over the weekend, I didn't do much at all and just trying to catch up on work. And I'm like, I need something to relax me, but something that's ice cold.
Well, you've got Brian Tibbetts here on this podcast, so he's both relaxing.
He's stone cold,
and
not ice cold.
Stone cold. Brian, what do you got in the glass tonight?
Another Vallejo India Pale Ale from Half Acre out of Chicago. Absolutely hits the spot on this disgustingly sweltering evening. And I might follow it up with a Lagunitas Daytime Ale if this one just doesn't do it for me, because that's just one of those two beer nights on a Monday.
He brought a beer sideboard to the podcast. This is tech that we can absolutely use going forward. What magic did you guys play? I've been really busy with the ramp up to football season. I dirtled around, that was for you, Matt, a little bit on Arena, and that was about it, just to kill some time and have some fun in the air conditioning. Matt, you were at the sales conference, retreat, drunken financial orgy. Did you have any time to play some cardboard?
I got to play a wacky draft. So that was about it. I did get to play some online with a modern deck I'm testing. Unfortunately, I will not be able to stream tomorrow night as well, but I've got to find something for the Invitational. Every week I got to remind everyone I'm in the Invitational. I'm trying this new grinding station deck out, and I've played it online a few times, so there's something somewhere there.
Usually we keep what goes on in the pre and post show to the patrons, but we weren't recording at this point because we were talking about some show business. So I'm going to snatch just a piece of that and bring it to light here on the podcast. Brian, what was the first thing that Matt asked us about when we all got on tonight that he should add to his grinding station deck?
I'm not misrepresenting this, patrons. And I quote, should I add Beastmaster Ascension to my grinding station deck?
And modern.
And modern. So...
hey, it's got John stuff, and I did stuff the, to shorten it.
This text went out a few days ago, and I got it, and I opened it, and I looked at the deck. I've never played Grinding Station in my life. I've never played KCI in my life. I've played plenty of Thopter Sword, and it's that angle that I knew he was going at it from, but, oh, that thing just looks like a hot mess to me already, Brian.
It is. It's basically a Kentucky Brown, you know, as a deck. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just exactly how it sums up Hurley's deck-building style. I love how Hurley just kind of throws out this card like a deck that has zero green in it. He wants to run Beastmaster Ascension. And he's like, oh, I can just mess with the mana base. No big deal. Which, you know, is obviously a thing you could do. This is an interesting thing. And Hurley, I'm going to give you all the reps you want versus Mardu Pyromancer or Tron or Burn. You just Skype me up anytime and we're going to take this Grinding Station deck through its paces.
I like it.
While Matt's trying to figure out what he can cut in Grinding Station to add Beastmaster Ascension. Brian, what magic did you get to play this week? You were coming off the PPTQ with Mardu Pyromancer last week. We talked about that. Did you get to play any follow-up?
I did not get to play any follow-up, just been following the Shark Tank, who have been hitting the PPTQ season, and Eric Hoffman on the RPTQ side, who finished 2-2 up in Chicago and had Giordano's Pizza to make him feel a little bit better before kind of coming home. He was hoping he was going to have a better showing at the RPTQ, but alas, was not meant to be. But that's okay. He still qualified for two more leading up to Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica. I have just been watching coverage when I can. It's we're into soccer season for my daughter's team, which I'm the coach for. And between trying to shuffle players back and forth and taking care of house stuff and everything, it just wasn't going to happen. So I'm looking at the calendar very specifically to try to sneak down and play some Modern on Friday nights, because that's basically where the store is trying to do FNM Modern on Friday and just get some more reps with decks. You're busy. Hurley plays a wacky draft. I get nothing, but that doesn't mean we don't know what we're talking about, right?
This podcast is predicated on the fact that I don't think we know what we're talking about. I mean, we're 114 episodes in. We're still trying to figure that out. Hopefully it went your way with whatever magic you got to play this week. This is a special week. It is a Patreon raffle week. And not only is it a Patreon raffle week, it is more swag from GP Minneapolis. Hurley is opening up the spreadsheet right now. I know that we have 41 eligibles, and while we figure that out, we'll soon have more, because we're going to add Nick Sargent to that list coming up in September. Nick jumped in at the Heart of the Hards level on Patreon. Nick, thank you so much. We appreciate it. The fact that you enjoy the cast enough to reach into your wallet and share any little drip with us is overwhelming and gives us both a sense of purpose and a reason to continue to go on. Okay, that may be a little bit grandiose, but everything you do, we try and plow back into the show, and such as one of the things that we have to raffle tonight, three of our M19 preview cards, which we signed and will be sending out in a package. We have three cleansing Novas, each signed by one of us. I think this is going to replace Fumigate in the blue-white control deck. It doesn't give you the life gain, but it gives you flexibility with being able to go after artifacts or creatures, and that's a key feature to playing a control deck, especially early when you don't know what all the threats are going to be. Flexibility is always great. So three signed Cleansing Novas, our latest preview card, up for raffle tonight. Matt's got the list. I've got the randomizer. 22, Matt. 22.
That would be Chris Beeston, a local from Quincy.
Well, we're going to honor Chris's request. He's been a longtime supporter of the cast, which is to immediately re-raffle any of his winnings. So
all right,
loves to support the cast and has told me very often to re-raffle. And if it turns out that you want these, Chris, just let me know. We'll grab three more and get them autographed and send them your way. He's more of a legacy player, too. So I don't think he's going to be missing out on these in standard. When he does play, he doesn't play white. So I don't think this is going to be something that he's dying to get his hands on. So let's go with the re-raffle button. 16. 16, Matthew.
Joey Ruckel.
Joey. Believe he was one of our
13 months, I believe.
Yeah, early adopters. Congratulations, Joey. Thank you so much. And we will get these out to you as soon as we get the opportunity. Three signed Cleansing Novas, our Patreon raffle this week. Joey, congratulations. Thank you for supporting the cast. We enjoy having you with us. That brings us up to this week's tournaments, Modern. This was really the focus that Magic has turned to at both the GP level and with SCG at the moment. Brian, you were really staying up to date with what went on in Prague. Did we see some innovation, or is this just kind of the same old, same old?
Innovation for sure, and I want to get to that after kind of run down the basics of Prague. But one shy, guys, of 2,000 players showed up in Prague. 1,999 players registered for this GP, which is absolutely huge. We had Lori Pispa with Hardened Scales taking down Theo Mary's Humans deck in the finals. The top eight featured such names as Andrei Strasky, Javier Dominguez, and Joachim Haram. Two Banned Spirits deck, the one Hardened Scales deck, an Ironworks combo, Jeskai Control, two Humans, and an Infect to round that out. Pispa's Hardened Scales deck, I think it was kind of the talk of this and how quickly it can just get out and get out in front of people. Arcbound Ravager, Walking Ballista, those cards in combo was just too much for everybody else in the field. So that, to me, was kind of the innovation, was that Hardened Scales deck finally taking a top spot after kind of being the bridesmaid, but never the bride. 9th through 32nd, it was littered with the blue-white control deck and a little bit of Jeskai control in there. We had some company decks, Mardu Pyromancer decks, Bridgevine Hollow One. But there was one deck that stood out, guys, and I think I know that you know which one this is going to be. Camillo Lukesh, an Austrian player, brought a homebrew to his very first GP and took it all the way to 47th place. Cornucopia deck, which was using the power of Astral Cornucopia, the power of Welding Jar, Arcbound Ravager, and Filigree Sages to generate obscene amounts of mana to crank out a huge Walking Ballista and basically just ping your opponent to death. Did you guys get to see this in play? And if so, what was your first reaction, Sean?
I didn't get to see the Cornucopia deck in play, but Filigree Sages. I mean, we're going back to a Lara block here. This is hidden tech. And it's decks like this that Matt has to get excited for. Not because of the tech involved, but because these are the kind of decks that when they pop up, Matt, they really have the chance to do something difficult, which is to move the needle financially in Modern. We saw this happen a couple weeks back with the black-red Dredgevine deck, where Vengevine, which was already a sought-after mythic, absolutely skyrocketed, as did Bridge from Below. Cornucopia, Astral Cornucopia, is probably too recent of a print and too far off anybody's radar to take that kind of leap, but it's this kind of technology that lets that happen in a big card pool like Modern.
So this is another deck that was essentially made way better by War of Invention. We've talked about War of Invention pretty significantly in this podcast, and I will say it's a powerful card, very, very powerful card. I have seen these decks run around before a couple years ago. I think it was when Astral Cornucopia actually first came out. But Filigree Sages was kind of a new slash old tech. That was from way back in the day. But it was fun to see somebody kind of take something unique, you know, go all the way down. But this entire deck was being held up by, you know, Mox Opal and War of Invention. That tells you the power of those cards.
Matt, you're hitting on something that I want to reinforce. Don't be afraid, if you've done your homework, to take something that you might be the only one on. One of the best experiences that I've had playing Magic was at an SCG in St. Louis back in Innistrad block when it was paired with, I believe it was Return to Ravnica, when I played five-color mono black control. And it was absolutely amazing. You had the shock lands, so you could use the four-drop Liliana that searched for a swamp to search for any color that you wanted in the deck. You could play Sphinx's Revelation. I played Mutilate in that deck. And I actually had a really good time and had some good results with it as well. The ability to put something together to test it and believe in it that I think some people lack creatively in Magic, whether it's the creativity or whether it's the moxie, I think we could probably do a whole show on that. But don't be afraid. If you've done the work to take something out and put it on stage in a bigger format other than just FNM, and that's what led us to Hardened Scales too, which, as Brian said, was right there in the top spot. I don't know if it was the finals match or just the top eight match, Brian, when I saw that deck win when it was, quote, stranded on two mana on turn four. Hardened Scales plus two mana for the Walking Ballista after they had managed to get out a Ravager, and they just went to town after that and won on the two mana through the Welding Jar, which they had to back it up and to obviously stifle or counterspell the removal spell that the opponent might have had. But that's a deck that, much like Boggles, I think was initially kind of sneered at because green-white is always kind of, by the competitive scene, like, oh, yeah, green-white, how old are you? Which is completely an inappropriate way to think about it because of what we've seen it do. Maverick really won over a lot of people in Legacy in its time as well.
Oh, yeah. This Hardened Scales deck, as I was saying, the speed and the consistency, as soon as Hardened Scales gets out, and it's only one mana, absolutely bonkers. You've got to suddenly be, you know, expecting to see a Ravager come down or a Ballista come down. We're used to seeing this kind of in the standard metagame with cards like Rishka, Puma Renegade, and things to get kind of extra counters on things. Those are the kinds of cards, you know, when people were looking at it in standard and, you know, the Constrictor decks, that's the kind of stuff that people were, you know, utilizing for Walking Ballista. Well, how about having a one mana enchantment that comes down and you can do such broken things in modern already with Arcbound Ravager and with Walking Ballistas. Let's just, you know, ramp it up even more. And then you add in that affinity angle of Welding Jar and Crucible of Worlds and other things. It's kind of a house. And so we've got to really respect this deck going forward. I would encourage everybody, Hurley included, as he gets ready for his Invitational in December, to definitely test against the Hardened Scales deck. And I think this would be a fun one to play.
We have a local affinity player who is hardcore against the Hardened Scales. He thinks it's terrible. And I actually think it's better than normal affinity, because affinity right now is like half a turn too slow, somewhere in that range. And I think this speeds it up enough. It takes away a little bit of its consistency, just a bit, but it speeds it up enough where it just like really, really knocks some decks out of the format.
Matt, I don't know if you've mentioned this lately, but you're qualified for the Invitational and you actually need a modern deck. Is this one deck that you're considering? Is this too powerful for you? Would you like to take something a little more dirtly? I mean, what's your thoughts on Hardened Scales and maybe playing it?
You know, it has crossed my mind. I want to see kind of where the metagame goes towards, because once you hit the Stony Silence metagame, that's, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll just call it what it is, the Stony Silence metagame, the Artifact Hate metagame, I don't think that the deck is nearly that good to be able to beat those. There's probably a build out there that does it, but it's going to be questionable at best.
It'd be interesting to see if this is a deck that maybe picks up some points on October 1st when the next banned and restricted announcement comes out. As it is, though, I think we're all in agreement. This is a deck well worth watching. Modern wasn't just going on in Prague. It was at SCG Baltimore this weekend as well. 563 came out in Baltimore. Steven Barakov on Blue White Spirits took it down over Annalise Faustino on Mono Green Tron, 2-0 in the finals. I watched this one very closely. Faustino was an absolute master of her craft all weekend long with Mono Green Tron, and her deck just abandoned her in the finals. It wouldn't do anything in game one, and she still almost turned it around. And then in game two, a mulligan to four didn't leave her a fighting chance. It's heartbreaking to be deserted by your deck at the 11th hour. The rest of the top eight, Burn, Blue-White-Red Control, Dredge, Blue-White Control, Humans, Black-Red Hollow One. That is a varied modern metagame. Guys, what I took away from this is that whether you make it Bant or whether you make it Blue-White, people have been murmuring about KCI, but that deck always seems to be towing the line of potentially being targeted by the Banhammer. The best deck in my mind that has come up that is not even close to that ban line, but still plenty powerful and has a lot of play, is the Spirits deck. Whether you play it as Blue-White, as Barakov did this weekend, or whether you play it in its Bant form, I think is really up to the pilot. Brian, you've been playing a lot of Modern lately. What's your take on where this Spirit deck fits in?
Got a lot of different tools. The Bant gives you just a little bit more varied creatures and things. I kind of like the Blue-White take by Barakov this weekend. I think it just makes it a little bit more streamlined. I love the addition of the Kira Great Glass Spinner. It just seems absolutely right, since it is obviously a Spirit. And just so thin on spells, 4 Aether Vial, 4 Path to Exiles, and 31 creatures. It's kind of like a Humans-y build, right? It's just doing so many other things than the Humans deck can by making your creatures hexproof, you know, having disruption with Rattle Chains and Selfless Spirit, Spell Queller. It's just really, really great. So I really, really like this. Modern's got to be streamlined. You've got to be efficient with your mana. And that's what the Spirit deck does very, very well.
The Day 2 meta was made up of 129 players. 18% of the Day 2 decks were Humans decks. That's 23 decks. The other decks that had 5 or more copies, Burn in second place with 9. I like it, Baltimore. Keep it going. Black Red Hollow One with 8. Blue White Control with 7. Mono Green Tron, Jun, KCI, and Mardu Pyromancer each had 6. And then Storm and Affinity each had 5 copies. Matt, I don't know if we've mentioned this, but you're qualified for the Invitational, which is going to be Modern. If this is the metagame that you're looking at, does any one of these decks stand out to you, or are you looking to attack it in a particular way?
I really like the Bant Spirits list. The reason I like it is I've watched Cat Light. She's a streamer that's worked on this for a long time. She's been able to tune the deck. The new, I think it's Supreme Phantom Spirit Lord helped out a good amount. Watching her, she's just been able to just house people with the deck. If I haven't really focused on a single deck yet, you know, in October, November, something like that rolls around, I am absolutely going to lean towards that Banned Spirits deck, because I think the Banned Spirit is just a very, very powerful deck.
Modern Classic this weekend as well. 152 in Baltimore. Nicholas Derlew, 2-0'd Austin Collins, Amulet Titan, taking down humans. We didn't see Banned Spirits in this one, but it's because I think that a lot of Banned Spirits players were busy on day two in the main event. Blue-White Control had a couple copies. You looked at Storm, Human, Eldrazi Taxes in its black and white form, and green-black midrange there. That's just Redless Jund is what that essentially is. It's green-black has long been the backbone of the Jund deck in Modern. In Standard, 72 people had no one else to hang out with, so they played Standard this weekend. Emma Handy took it down on black-blue midrange 2-0 over Harry Chuckleladder on red-black aggro. The top eight, two more red-black aggro decks, two blue-black midrange decks, in addition to Handy's winning blue-black midrange deck. One Vant Nexus deck, because that's all the Nexuses that were available. And Mono Red also had one copy popping up in Standard. Standard rotation once again coming up October 5th for anybody who had lost track. Those were the tournaments this weekend. Coming up this weekend, GP Richmond, and it's a double GP. We don't normally see these outside of the extravaganzas that tend to go on in Las Vegas. We've even seen triple GPs there. But the double GP this weekend, Standard and Legacy. That's right. Put on your best tie. It's Legacy weekend coming up this weekend. And if you don't think it could get any better, well, it's just about to. Break out your finest hairbrush, because the hair from Sugarloaf is going to be featured all weekend long. Guys, we have been complaining for episodes and episodes that Magic's promotion department doesn't properly leverage what we view as many of the top players in the game. Well, Channel Fireball Events, which runs the GPs in North America, has jumped onto an idea that I absolutely love. They're going to be following Reed Duke at GP Richmond in Legacy all weekend long. And on rounds when he's not featured in the live feature match, he'll be part of Time Walk coverage and then be joining the booth to discuss not only his plays, but his thought process during that live match. Guys, I think this is absolutely fantastic, not only in the fact that Reed was picked. There are several top pros that I think would have been absolutely fantastic to pull this off with, but the fact that someone in Magic who is covering the game on a regular basis has decided that the concept of promoting top pros and using a charismatic player to promote the game, I don't know why that seems like such a monumental leap to me at this point, but I'm glad they've finally taken it. Maybe my expectations were a little bit too low. And I think Reed was absolutely on the short list of players that I would have suggested for this kind of coverage. Matt, we constantly talk about marketing the game. I think this, within the microcosm of those who are going to watch Twitch, and hopefully those who can find out about it via Twitter or whatever other mechanism you have, will come to this, because Reed is not only a top player, but I think he makes the game accessible, intelligent, and fun to watch.
I think all those are true. I'm not going to call it so unique, but it's different enough that I want to see how it plays out, and I will be making a point to the best of my ability. It's Labor Day weekend, 3.5-day weekend for me, but I'm going to try and make it a point to watch as much of this as I can so I can see how it plays out, because I could see it being a complete and utter freaking train wreck. I could also see it just being the most genius thing they've done in years, and I don't know which one it's going to be.
Now, Brian, there is no promise that he's going to be featured all weekend long, because if he ends up going 2-2 and dropping, then that's going to be the end of the Reed experiment, if you will. But as a concept, I'm very excited about this, and it's going to push Legacy.
It's going to push Legacy, and I think that's the big deal about this. You know, the Legacy community has been clamoring for months and months and months about, you know, not having enough tournaments, not having enough coverage. The little snafu that Channel Fireball did fix about, you know, not running a old school Pro Tour qualifier, switching that out in Richmond this weekend, switching it to Modern instead, and they listened, etc. So I think this is a great thing. Legacy has gotten the short end of the stick, I think, just because as the game grows broad, and Legacy and Vintage are at that kind of narrow top part of the history of the game. But the players are so fierce and the players love their format so much that I think Channel Fireball has hit upon something that I think is going to pay huge dividends for them down the road by investing in this Legacy coverage with one of the top players in the game and Reed Duke. And surprise, you say it could be a total train wreck. Do you think because of the mix of commentators between Duke and Riley, or between Duke and Willoughby, or Duke and, you know, anybody else in the booth, or is it just kind of how it's just kind of new and they might not have everything figured out?
It's going to be a big portion of it's new. Things might not be figured out. I do think that Reed can carry it for a long time. Think of it as a 12-hour, 20-hour stream, something along those lines. Is it going to be so crazy? You know, is it going to be like so crazy and he's playing so long that essentially, you know, he can't carry the show anymore because he's running out of things to talk about? I don't think that's going to happen. I am curious to see how this turns out and if they have the kind of the bugs and the kinks worked out of it.
Now, Matt, I understand the way this is set up. I don't think that there will be a problem unless I'm misunderstanding it. If he's the live match, they may do like a quick interview with him afterward, but it's only when he's the time walk match that he'll be in the booth and the match will actually be playing out while he's commenting on it. So I think there'll be plenty of sort of grist for the mill at that point, if that's what you're worried about.
I'm a little worried about that, but I'm also, I mean, Reed is very comfortable under the camera, but we've seen, like, when I'm streaming, when you know people are watching you consistently the entire time, you tend to play differently, especially if you're trying to explain your plays or after the fact, if he's trying to, you know, basically say, gosh, I need to watch that video, or if he's just frustrated, you know, maybe he loses the game and he's frustrated and he's basically like, don't bother me, get away from me type of thing. I don't think that's going to happen. I am definitely curious to see on a live scale how this quote-unquote streaming is going to play out.
I'm going to double down on my comment from earlier. On the list of pros that I would have picked, I'm not saying he was the only one, but he's on the short list of three or so that I can think of off the top of my head that I think this would absolutely be a home run with. So I'm hoping it goes very well this weekend, and I'm looking forward to this new piece of coverage for GP Richmond. Guys, a piece of art goes a long way. Whether it's Brian sketching something on a napkin or Matt paying for a velvet Ajani, you never know what you're going to end up with. Maybe it's because a velvet runic Armasaur wasn't available. Sometimes you just got to scale your expectations down, you know, in order to get what you want in life. But if you wanted the original art that came from the San Diego Comic-Con Planeswalkers done by Therese Nielsen this year, you could have had it. I wasn't aware of this until I saw the article on Hipsters of the Coast. They did a great job, Danny Caldrider, covering the fact that Therese Nielsen, in addition to doing the art for WotC, has also elected to sell the original works that were scanned to make the cards. They are all now completed on auction, and you might think, okay, that's great. She made a couple extra bucks. Liliana Untouched by Death brought in just a hair shy of $23,000. Nissa Vital Force, $25,600. Chandra, Torch of Defiance, $35,000. Jace Cunning Castaway, just a hair over $28,000. And Gideon of the Trials, $22,988. You add it all up, that's $134,638 over the last 5 weeks. And your chance to own a piece of Magic history isn't done, because according to reports, Nielsen is now considering putting up the sketches, the black and white sketches, that served as the framework for these pieces. Matt, you're the most active art collector here on the show, and we're often talking about artists in the game being a little bit underappreciated and certainly, by many scales, undercompensated for their works. I think this is a fantastic way for the artists to sort of double down on the contribution that they're making. And certainly someone as popular as Therese Nielsen will have more pull than some beginner or less known artists. But I was elated that she was able to grab this compensation for the tremendous work that she does while making, by all reports, one fan very happy who got 4 out of 5. And the one that got the fifth piece, apparently either very happy or soon to be very rich, because the reports are that the purchaser who picked up the other four may be making an over-the-top offer to the only piece that he didn't get in order to consolidate the set. I'm interested in your opinion on this concept as it goes forward. Did we break new ground for artists? I'm sure it's possible this has happened before, but this has certainly drawn the widest set of community eyes based on, one, the popularity of Nielsen, and two, grotesquely, the sum of the funds at stake here.
I'm very happy to see this happening. This is obviously the premier artist in the in this whole artist community, but I am very, very happy to see that this is selling for what it is. Good for Therese and good for the game, because I think this is the type of stuff that you might see on CNN or, you know, someplace like that, just saying small quote unquote magic artists sold for tens of thousands of dollars and probably at some point will sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Brian, you have a home that has often been complimented by art. Most of it is of the variety of a 3-year-old or an 11-year-old. But is magic art something, as it grows, that you would consider adding to your collection and portfolio? Where do you fall on seeing artists now making these original works available to the community and being paid on a scale of an artist doing great work rather than somebody who's doing something for a game?
First of all, I think what it brings to the forefront is just how beautiful some of the magic artwork is, and it gets lost. We've talked about this before on the show. It gets lost in the small inches of card frame that we have to appreciate this, but in large format, some of these paintings are absolutely stunning, and I think the artistry of Therese Nielsen is appreciated, you know, in the top five of artists, magic artists of all time. So I love the fact that, you know, this is being brought to the forefront for collectors alike. Secondly, I think that artwork overall, artists get a pittance of what they're really, time they put into it and things of that nature. So anytime they can have a good payday, I say go for it, make your cash, etc. This is not like an NFL signing bonus, by God. You know, it's real money, obviously, but you know, we're not talking like she can now suddenly retire. It's good cash for what she does. And I'd say, you know, more power to her to bring this to the forefront and maybe for it to be picked up by a couple of other mainstream sources to kind of showcase what we get to play with on a daily basis as a game is really high art and expressively is just absolutely objectively beautiful. So I'm glad that a lot of other people are going to be able to see that.
Sean's selfish take: I hope she never makes enough money to just retire, because I want her to keep doing these beautiful pieces for the game that I love. So I get to look down at my cards when I draw my opening seven and see something amazing each and every time. But I do hope that other artists can eventually take advantage of this and help themselves along the way through what they do and the joy and the beauty that they do bring to something that we love. Therese Nielsen, good on you for cashing in on that great work. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Maybe those Nielsen portraits would be a fitting tribute in the lobby as we walk toward Matt's financial elevator. You know, the one made out of hundreds glued together for the doors that just slide open and let you in as you're about to go up or down. Who is that in the elevator with you, and why is their arm the key to many other worlds, Matthew?
Tezzeret Artifice Master. I really think at under $10, this card's a great buy. I mean, you can even pick some up at $9. Artifacts are popular in EDH, popular in other formats. I think moving forward, Guilds of Ravnica, I think, is going to be relatively artifact heavy from some of the concept art. Have a good weekend and it'll stick at $20 or so, $15 to $20. So pick up your playsets now. Core 2019 was not that popular to draft. I don't think there's as much product out there as people think there is.
This week's In the Elevator, Tezzeret, Artifice Master, here on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. The Brewmaster has been, well, concerned about his health lately. And if he can defend it properly, he may just get himself an angelic reward. Brian, what do we got?
That was an awesome intro to this card. This is one of my favorites of all time. I think if there's any kind of tribe out there that I would get behind playing tribal deck in whatever format, I think it would be Angels. Everybody knows how much I like tokens as well. So these two married together in a perfect card that has been seeing a little bit of play in Legacy and Modern as well. Luminarch Ascension. For one white and one other, an enchantment at the beginning of each opponent's end step. If you didn't lose life this turn, you may put a quest counter on Luminarch Ascension. For a white and one, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if Luminarch Ascension has four or more quest counters on it. Curly, let me start with you. I know that you're pretty bullish on this card as well from a financial standpoint. What about from a brewing standpoint? Where do you see Luminarch Ascension?
I love this card, especially in EDH. I don't play that much EDH anymore. It's seen some fringe modern play, but I do think that it's just waiting for its time in the sun, if that makes sense. I think in these life gain decks, that's going to be where it comes in. People just don't have a chance to really take damage. I also think if we get more proliferate style cards, really like this card if we get proliferate. And I think in like a blue-white control, you could potentially have enough cards that are putting counters on there, putting stuff on there, or doubling the counters that you can actually go and you can say, okay, this is how I'm making this deck. And I really, really do think that that's where this deck needs to be at. It's kind of a blue-white control deck, especially in modern, if need be.
Sean, how about you? You as bullish on this as Hurley is, or do you see this kind of relegated to the meh cards of modern and legacy?
No, this is a card that I have longed to see in modern sideboards. I think that you could go with this as an alternate win condition in blue-white control, as Matt was talking about. Because we know that control decks don't like to invest a lot of mana or resources in their win conditions. This is something at 2 mana that if you're on the play, you can probably slip down on turn 2 and then put the onus on your opponent to play into you every turn. That's where control decks shine, when you play 1 for 1 and your opponent can't just gather up some resources and try to overwhelm your mana in one turn cycle. If you want to look to the main deck, I think a fog deck in modern is possible. You have all the best fogs. You now have Nexus of Fate as an opportunity, almost like a hybrid fog taking turns deck. Yes, Luminarch Ascension only triggers at the end of your opponent's turn, but you can set up the game state to the point where you have the option of either letting your opponent play and triggering this, or if you borrow some tech from the taking turns deck, making some other threats along the way while you're taking your bonus turns. So I think Luminarch Ascension has some play to it, and I'd love to see people brew more with this card.
I absolutely agree. I think this is great. And where Modern is right now, there's a lot of kind of combo-oriented decks. There's not a whole lot of really, really fast, aggressive decks. Humans wants to get out onto the board, but they're not attacking every turn necessarily. A lot of times they're setting up, looking for that alpha strike. You know, the only one that comes to mind that maybe might punish this a little bit is a burn-style deck. But Luminarch Ascension does such a good job at fighting through that, because 4/4 angels can block burn creatures pretty much all day, and it keeps it out of the range of lightning bolts and the other spells. So I think this card is ripe to make a comeback. If you can flood your board with angels, a la Entreat the Angels, Luminarch Ascension, you are just going to be way ahead of the game. And this card definitely... I'm looking forward to on the results of SCG and Grand Prix leaderboards coming up in the next 6 months.
So does that mean then we have to do some brewing in modern? Because I really do think a blue-white control deck could potentially run this main deck combo.
The blue-white control deck as it stands right now, I don't think wants Luminarch Ascension. I think you've got to go a little bit more proactive. But with Teferi being just such a house, as everybody kind of knew at first, and then he kind of fell off and now is on the rise again saying, yeah, this card is for real. I think it plays really, really well into this, because you can use your mana so efficiently with Teferi. And if you've got the dual threat of bouncing all of your opponent's permanents with his ultimate, or making, you know, 4/4 angel tokens, what is your opponent going to do to try to, you know, destroy the enchantment, destroy the planeswalker? You're just coming at it from so many different sides. It can just kind of take over the game in that shell.
I'd love to hear from our listeners about this, because I have searched high and low. I have crawled through the dregs of the internet looking for a fun modern deck, and I have not run across one that was that looked remotely playable with Luminarch Ascension, but I think it's out there somewhere.
Seems to pair well with Jace the Mind Sculptor and Terminus, both of which are also legal in modern. So we'll see if this works well. Luminarch Ascension, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I'm going to be honest. I already talked about having my eyes opened by the green, white, hardened scales deck that was featured at GP Prague over the weekend has me scratching my head and thinking about something I haven't thought about in a long time. Playing green and white together in Modern. This deck looks like a lot of fun. I love green, but I tend to pair it with Sultai-style decks when I play Modern. I love white, but I tend to pair it with Mardu-style decks when I play Modern or Esper. Green and white never seem like the arranged marriage that I want when I go into a format as powerful as Modern. But that Hardened Scales deck has me thinking about it. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
It's funny. I was just thinking, I read a couple articles online about just how powerful Maverick was in Legacy and how a lot of people were poo-pooing Maverick because it comes down to between like Dark Maverick versus Maverick. And a lot of people, as you said so succinctly earlier, Sean, you know, how old are we? You're just playing green-white? That doesn't make any sense. But the Maverick lists are doing such good things. The taxing of effects of Thalia, the Stoneforge Mystic, Dryad Arbor, Green Sun Zenith. These are really, really strong plays in a Legacy metagame that is all about blue cards. And I think that's such a great way to go. And a lot of people are just saying, hey, so what? So what? You don't have black. You've got a lot more, a lot better mana base. You might be a little weak to combo, but so what? So this whole idea of accepting your limitations on colors to get more consistency, being proactive with your deck, I really like that approach sometimes. We tend to get too complicated and, oh, I got to have one sideboard card for this. Well, God, you know, what happens if you don't draw it in your 75? Big deal. You know, make sure your deck is doing what you want it to do. And so that's kind of a refreshing look at deck building. So I'm with you, looking at green, white, looking at maybe some of those colors that aren't exactly historically the strongest might actually have a place in our brew space.
Matt, what'd you do to get better this week?
Ran some deck ideas by a lot of different people, and I'm actively looking for a Modern deck. Let's put it that way. Obviously one that's out there, you know, kind of on the fringes, but I'm slowly learning more and more about Modern. I've obviously know the basics of the format, but I really need to get kind of behind what's really good, what's really bad type of thing. But I am definitely looking forward to finding the deck I want. And I think it does exist out there.
No, you brave soul. Glad you joined us on this week's episode of Tryhards. We'll see you next week after GP Duke here on Tryhards.